Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 44 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 1st of November 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Andy and Margaret. And in the news, blockages at the new Children's Library, local venues welcome Halloween business, and the Outer Harbour is now the port of East Anglia. Details on these and many other local stories in just a while, plus Vision Norfolk's November schedule and a couple of weird tales in this week's Grapevine Extra. Before that, though, we have a couple of birthdays. So we say very many happy birthday wishes to both Jane Wright and Lisa Smith, both celebrating next Thursday the 6th. Best wishes to you both. Okay, without further ado, let's welcome Margaret and Andrew with the first part of this week's news.
Hello, and we have this week's news with Andrew and Margaret, and Margaret's going to start.
Hello, everybody. Well, here I am again, and Andy is sitting opposite me, all in a fluster because he got held up by the traffic jam, and we got a bit worried in case he wasn't going to turn up. But here he is.
Yeah,
All made better now?
I made it.
Good. Anyway, I'll begin with the first part of the news. So, if you're sitting comfortably, off we go. Could county council elections be delayed again? Norfolk County Council's elections for next May could be delayed for yet another year, with the government coming under pressure to put them on ice until 2027. The possibility of a second delay after this year's elections were suspended have been slammed by Reform UK, who say Conservatives and Labour are running scared of polls predicting success for Nigel Farage's party. Ministers are considering a plea from a number of Conservative leaders to postpone county council elections because of the forthcoming shake-up of local councils and the creation of elected mayors in areas such as Norfolk and Suffolk. Kay Mason-Billig, Conservative leader of Norfolk County Council, said she has not sought a delay, but it is understood other Tory leaders in Conservative-held county councils are lobbying hard for one. If the elections do not happen until May 2027, it would mean the majority of Norfolk's 84 county councillors last faced the electorate at the ballot box in 2021. The elections would be held in the transition year ahead of the creation of a new council or councils, which would replace the current eight in Norfolk through Labour's local government reorganisation. This year's elections had already been controversially put off until next year, because of the need to create a combined authority ahead of the voting for Norfolk and Suffolk's first mayor next year. According to the Times newspaper, some unnamed Tory leaders have said they want a further delay because having Reform mayors and Reform council leaders who are all brand new will create instability in the run-up to the local government shake-up. But Nick Taylor, chairman of Reform UK's Norwich branch, hit out at the possibility of another delay to the elections. He said, all polling suggests that if elections are permitted in May, Reform UK would win a majority in Norfolk, with the Conservatives and Labour being relegated to bit part players behind the Liberal Democrats. At the moment, we have 84 county councillors. Three have a mandate as they hold their positions by virtue of by-elections. The remaining 81 have no mandate, yet they still make decisions about how our money is spent. He dismissed the argument that elections need to be cancelled to allow local government reorganisation and devolution to be steered by existing councillors. Mr Taylor said, "This is a very poor excuse for cancelling democracy in Norfolk, as we all know that local government reorganisation and devolution are projects imposed upon us by the government and will happen whether we like it or not, and regardless of the political make-up of the County Council." Kay Mason-Billig, Conservative leader of Norfolk County Council, said she had written to Local Government Secretary Steve Reid last month seeking an early indication as to whether there would be county hall elections next year, but had not specifically requested a delay. Mrs Mason-Billig said, "It costs taxpayers money and a lot of staff time to put these on, and we just need to know. I have not asked for a delay, just pointed out the practicalities we are facing and asked for an early decision. There are pros and cons for either decision. It's expensive to run an election for a council about to be abolished, and we will be criticised for it. However, there is the argument about a democratic deficit. If they don't go ahead, and we'll be criticised for that. Ultimately, the government will decide, and we will be damned either way." Despite the uncertainty, the Conservatives have started to announce their candidates for the 2026 County Council elections, should they go ahead. Great Yarmouth Conservative Association has announced their candidates, and they are James Bensley, the Fleggs, Gary Boyd, North Caister and Ormsby, Ivan Murray-Smith, South Caister and Bure, Tamsin Lodge, Yarmouth North and Central, Penny Carpenter, Yarmouth Nelson and Southtown, Carl Smith Braden, Lucas Stankivius, Magdalen, Graham Plant, Gorson St Andrews, and Carl Annison, Lothingland. Mr Plant, chairman of Great Yarmouth Conservative Association, said, "This is a fantastic team, with a blend of experienced councillors and fresh new candidates, all passionate about serving their local communities."
And I've got some news of Halloween events. The end of the summer season was once a scary time for Norfolk's theme parks and attractions as they headed into the winter months. But the growing popularity of Halloween has helped the industry beat the autumn lull, boosting profits and pulling in new audiences. Primeval, Norfolk's largest Halloween event, returned to roar at Lenwead for its 16th year last year, promising to be bigger, darker and scarier than ever before. The award-winning attraction draws in 1,700 visitors per night over its 14-night run, and now accounts for a quarter of Roar's income annually. We used to see a drop-off in visitors in September, followed by a lull until we got into October half-term, when it would pick up again, said Ben Francis, Roar's park director during the day and Primeval manager at night. We would have a window of 9 days during October half-term, but then the rest of the month we'd be dead. Since Primeval, the park is busier in the evening than it is during the day because it's a completely new audience. It has taken time to grow and develop that new audience, but now it has become a rite of passage that once you turn 12, you go to Primeval and then you can go to school and brag about it to your mates. Great Yarmouth Pleasure Beach has been running its Halloween event, Fairground Frights, for 6 years. Executive Director Jamie Jones said the events have gone from strength to strength in recent years, with October half-term now generating around 20% of the Pleasure Beach's revenue for the year. "We started off quite small, with only around 15 to 20 actors," Mr Jones said. "We're now up to 45 actors this year, which is the most we've ever had. Halloween just seems to be getting more and more popular each year. It's huge for us because all of a sudden we're open evenings, additional hours that we never had before. Nearing the end of the season, there's always a lull in between the end of summer and October half term, when we're only really open weekends. We've got a lot of regular customers who come year after year. So for us, it's about trying to do something different each year to keep them coming back. It's a nice addition to get some money in the bank and finish on a high. Primeval now employs around 140 actors for its immersive haunts and maze experiences. When I started here 15 years ago, we used to do three or four nights with three mazes and saw about 3,000 people, said Mr. Francis, who started out as a scare actor at the park. Now we have 14 nights, six haunts, and we see about 1,700 people per night. Roar employs 50 full-time staff through the year and up to 140 people in the peak summer months at its dinosaur adventure park.
A man is due to be sentenced next month after he was found guilty of biting a pub landlady when she tried to stop him getting into his car as he was drunk. Wayne Ellis had been drinking at the Feathers pub in Galston, but had been refused more drink due to him being highly intoxicated. After leaving the High Street venue with his girlfriend, Ellis was followed to the car park by the landlady, who stopped him from getting into his car. Ellis is said to have then bitten the landlady during the incident in the car park in the early hours of July the 8th, 2023. The 50-year-old was found guilty of assault, occasionally actual bodily harm, after a trial in September. He is due to appear at Norwich Crown Court for sentence on November the 5th. Recorder Ruth Brander warned Ellis all options, including the possibility of a custodial sentence, were open to the court. The trial heard Ellis of Nuffield Close Galston had been the aggressor. Giving evidence during the trial, the victim told the court she felt a horrible popping sensation in her hand. She said, "At some point he managed to get part of my hand in his mouth. He grabbed my hand with his mouth and he bit me."
This is a story, rather worryingly, of some jobs at risk. Around 50 jobs at risk in the town after one of the biggest North Sea oil and gas contractors entered administration. Petrofac, which has an office in Great Yarmouth, has appointed administrators after a restructuring collapsed last week when its biggest customer cancelled a multi-billion pound wind farm contract. Around 50 people are employed at its office in Havenbridge House on North Quay, half permanent and the other half temporary workers. Petrofac has said its operations will continue as normal after its holding company filed for administration on Monday. The energy sector service provider employs about 7,300 people globally, with more than 2,000 jobs now online at its UK base in Aberdeen. Petrofac's shares were delisted from the London stock market this morning. The company had been trying to restructure its finances for more than a year, but it told investors on Thursday that the cancellation of a contract by European electricity grid operator TenneT, its biggest customer, meant a solvent restructuring was off the table. The contract was to build major offshore wind projects off the Dutch coast. The company said, having carefully assessed the impact of TenneT's decision, the board has determined that the restructuring, which had last week reached an advanced stage, is no longer deliverable in its current form. Founded in Texas in 1981, the firm has UK offices in Aberdeen, London, Woking and Great Yarmouth. Once a FTSE 100 firm, the company was worth about £6 billion in 2012, but has slumped in recent years following a serious fraud office investigation and a series of profit warnings. A company spokesman said, "Petrofac has a number of fundamentally strong businesses, and we're focused on delivering the best possible outcome for them through this process. Our long-established North Sea business continues to operate as normal, and management are working to minimise disruption for clients and employees.
Great Yarmouth Town Football Club will host a free event to raise awareness of cancer screening. The club will open its gates on Saturday, November the 1st for the event, which will take place from 10 a.m. until 12 p.m. at the Wellesley Recreation Ground. The event is being organised by GYUP-CIC, a local community interest company. GYUP is training cancer champions to provide ongoing awareness and practical support. They will be joined by a range of professional and community groups to provide information and ideas, to open up conversations and provide support around cancer. Young people will also have the chance to participate in various activities aimed at promoting physical fitness. Great Yarmouth Football Club will offer open football taster session for any under 16-year-olds who would like to give football a try. The event is free to attend, with gates opening at 9:45 a.m. The initiative is being supported by the Gorston Primary Care Network, Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care System and GYUP Primary Care Network.
And a runner man has been jailed for phoning a woman and asking if she and her children wanted anything from McDonald's. Chitnarong Gongwichian, 42, ignored a restraining order and called his ex-partner of 15 years to ask if she and their three children wanted anything from the fast food chain on the day of his release from prison. Norwich Magistrates Court heard that there were other calls on October the 20th, which the victim didn't pick up, but when she did answer, Gongwichian offered to bring them food from the fast food chain before being told by the woman to stop calling. She later informed the police of the calls made by Gongwichian of School Road in Runham, Great Yarmouth, and he was arrested and put in custody. At his court hearing, he pleaded guilty to two breaches of the restraining order by calling his ex-partner. Richard Mann, mitigating, argued that his client believed that the victim didn't want the restraining order and it was imposed by the police. But after she reported the calls to the force, Gongwichian recognised that she did want the restraining order in place. District Judge Matthew Bone, sentencing, said the defendant needs to understand the importance of court orders and sentenced Gongwichian to 6 months in prison and ordered him to pay a £154 victim surcharge.
Dramatic drone images have shown the aftermath of Storm Benjamin on one of Norfolk's most erosion-threatened beaches. Heavy rain and winds of up to 70 miles per hour pummeled the nation over the weekend, and in Hemsby, fears were rife that landslides could have been caused. The village has lost around 300 metres of its coast since the 1970s, so for the storm to have passed with less damage caused than anticipated has seen locals breathe a sigh of relief. Local filmmaker Sean Button captured some shots of the battered coast at Hemsby, taken as the winds settled. Images show the choppy waves crashing into the few sea defences in place on the shoreline there, protecting the gap in front of the lifeboat station and one section of the Marham's cliffs. Storm Benjamin's arrival came just weeks after officials said the structures installed to protect Hemsby pose a danger, as people who climb on them may fall in gaps and get trapped or get caught out by the tide. They have also questioned the effectiveness of the defences and say waves can still crash over the top or around the side. The move is a fresh blow for the village, which has lost 25 homes to the sea since 2013, and locals have described their possible removal as a kick in the teeth. Engineers have been carrying out studies of the structures around the village on behalf of Great Yarmouth Borough Council. Among the defences they are now suggesting be removed is an emergency rock berm installed by the council in 2023 as well as others put in place by homeowners trying to protect the village. New sea defences have been ruled out due to the huge £20 million cost of installing a rock berm nearly a mile long. The council also says that such a structure would risk destroying Hemsby's tourism trade, which is worth £100 million a year, as it would cover much of the sandy beach where thousands of tourists flock each summer.
People in Norfolk have been urged to attend public firework displays this bonfire night rather than setting off fireworks at home. The advice comes from the prevention team at Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service, which works across the county to stop fires from happening. Lilo Knight Griffin, Home Fire Safety Manager of the service, said, "Going to an organised public display makes it easier and safer for everyone, and they can be a great community event. Fireworks can be dangerous, and we have seen displays in people's gardens which sometimes lead to accidents and fires that could easily have been avoided." Norfolk County Council is advising people who decide to enjoy fireworks at home to only buy them from a reputable retailer and follow instructions on how to use them. A spokesman for the council said, "Remember not to give sparklers to children under five, and ensure anyone using a sparkler wears gloves and put the sparkler's hot end down into a bucket of water or sand when it's burnt out. If a fire does break out, call 999 immediately. And we wish you happy and safe celebrations."
And I have to say, round my way where I live, there's been fireworks going off for the last week, and you're sitting there quite peacefully watching the television and there's all this noise. What happened to keeping fireworks to November the 5th? But then I am an old grudge, aren't I?
Oh, we've got it our way too.
Oh, that's all right then. The government has promised to create 400,000 extra jobs in the next 5 years to support the UK's expanding clean energy sector. Plumbers, electricians and welders are among Labour's list of 31 priority occupations that are particularly in demand, with jobs in wind, solar and nuclear energy set to double to 86,000 by 2030, ministers say. Plans include 5 new technical excellence colleges to train workers with clean energy skills, with Energy Secretary Ed Miliband saying 10,000 extra jobs will be needed to build the Sizewell C nuclear power station in Suffolk. An industry report published earlier this year found that more than 6,500 additional offshore wind workers are needed in the east of England by the end of the decade to meet the government's clean energy targets. The world will need 532,000 new wind technicians by 2028, with 40% of the roles needing to be filled by new entrants, according to a report from the Global Wind Energy Council and Global Wind Organisation, that's GWO. Hexa's training is part of Great Yarmouth-based energy sector service provider Stowen Group, offering GWO and Engineering Construction Industry Training Board, ECTIB, accredited courses from the Energy Skills Centre at East Coast College in Lowestoft. It recently introduced financing options for its courses, making the route into employment within the renewables sector more accessible. Hexas has provided training to local, national and international delegates, and it's great to now add the ability of finance options for those wanting to join the sector, said Kieran Ford, Chief Operating Officer at Stowen Group. "We continue to work closely with the industry and the East Coast College with an aim to support the required growth needed to service the sector." Rachel Bunn, Director of Commercial Projects and Community at the College and Director of the East Coast Energy Training Academy, added, "This new model will allow new entrants to access the mandatory training to enter this exciting new career. In the East, there has never been more opportunity to harness the power of renewables."
Following Great Yarmouth Borough Council's recent decision to approve plans to better safeguard one of Banksy's Galston works, a specialist conservator has now been on site to carry out a detailed survey of the piece. The eye-catching art is in a shelter and shows a mechanical grabber. The expert assessment marks the first stage in identifying the best ways to preserve the mural from the effects of weathering and potential vandalism, whilst ensuring it can continue to be enjoyed in its original location. Possible conservation measures under consideration include a new Perspex-style protective cover and a specialist transparent varnish designed to guard against graffiti or damage. A council spokesperson said, "We're committed to preserving this unique piece of street art as part of our cultural story. This assessment is an important step in ensuring Banksy's work can remain a lasting feature of Galston seafront for years to come." At that recent meeting, councillors agreed to spend at least £5,000 on further protection measures to help ensure the Galston Beach shelter remains a popular landmark for locals and visitors alike.
A village GP is still battling Legionella bacteria 2 weeks after it was discovered in its water supply. Martha Medical Centre in Hemsby Road became aware of the problem after water sampling results detected traces during routine testing. Legionella is a type of bacteria found in fresh water that can cause an infection called Legionnaire's disease if inhaled through contaminated water droplets. Now, 2 weeks after the discovery, the practice has stressed that remedial action is still being taken out of hours to battle the bacteria. A spokesman on behalf of the Coastal Partnership, which runs Martha Medical Centre, said, "The health and safety of our patients, staff and visitors is always our top priority. Following routine testing, we received water sampling results which detected traces of Legionella. The practice remains open and patient appointments are continuing as scheduled."
All day I've faced a barren waste without the taste of water, cool water. Old Dan and I with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water. Listen to him, Dan. He's a devil, not a man. He spreads the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you? The nights are cool and I'm a fool. Each star's a pool of water, cool water. But with the dawn I'll wake and yawn and carry on to water, 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 water. Moving, Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's a devil, not a man. He spreads the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you? Water.
cool, clear water.
Frankie Lane there with much better water than they've got at Meltham. Okay, more full-fat news shortly. First, though, here's some news in brief.
Several teenagers have been questioned by police after an assault left a man hospitalised. Police officers arrested the four teenagers on Sunday on suspicion of assault after a man was attacked in Great Yarmouth. The man was seriously assaulted in an alleyway by Wolseley Road at around 11:40 p.m. and was taken to James Patridge Hospital for treatment. The teenagers were taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning. They were subsequently released on bail pending further investigation. And a house has been issued with a closure order after reports of antisocial behaviour. The order makes it a criminal offence for anyone, except authorised agencies, to enter the property, which sits in Plevna Terrace in Great Yarmouth. Police officers appeared before Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court last Thursday to ask for it to be granted under the Antisocial Behaviour, Crime and Policing Act of 2014. They said the activities at the property had been negatively impacting people who live nearby. Magistrates granted a full closure order, which will remain in force for 3 months from the date of issue. One person has been taken to hospital after a crash closed a section of the A47 for 3 hours. Emergency services, including police, fire and ambulance, attended Lowestoft Road near the James Paget Hospital in Gorleston at around 7 p.m. on Tuesday to a two-vehicle crash. The road was closed in both directions for 3 hours after the collision. A spokesman for the East of England Ambulance Service has stated that one person has been taken to hospital for further assessment and care. The road reopened around 10 p.m. And a fish and chip shop has been forced to temporarily close after a fire broke out. Gray's Traditional Fish and Chip Shop in Normwich Road, Hoveton, was the subject of an early morning blaze on Saturday. A spokesman for the North Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service said crews were called to the building at around 4 a.m. And crews from Wroxham, Sprowston and Carrow attended and use hose reel jets to extinguish the blaze at the business.
A woman suffered injuries after a car left an A road near Great Yarmouth Greyhound Racing Stadium. Officers were called to Yarmouth Road on the A149 in Caister after a car had left the road near the stadium at around 5 p.m. on Wednesday. No road closures were put in place, but police, fire and ambulance services attended the incident. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary said the driver was treated at the scene for her injuries by the ambulance service. A Great Yarmouth Building Society branch will be open for longer. From November the 3rd, the Yorkshire Building Society branch in Market Place will be open until 3:30 p.m. on weekdays. This is 1 hour longer than the previous closing time of 2:30 p.m. The Great Yarmouth branch is one of 52 branches across the country with extended hours. A biker suffered serious injuries after leaving the road for an unknown reason in Fritton. It happened at about 1:05 p.m. on October the 25th in Hempnall Road, Fritton, when a motorcyclist riding a black Kawasaki ER500 suddenly left the road for reasons yet to be established. The road was closed while emergency services, including the East Anglian Air Ambulance, attended the scene. The motorcyclist, a man in his 40s, suffered serious injuries and was taken to Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital by land ambulance at the time. He has since been transferred to Addenbrookes Hospital for further treatment. A Victorian place of worship in Gorleston has been sold at auction for £107,000. East Anglia Auction House sold Bethel Mission Hall in Gorleston after an online bidding contest. The building had been used as a gospel hall for many decades and has now been sold, having sat idle for several years. Located on Pier Walk, close to the seafront, the building offers a range of potential uses, including conversion to residential, subject to the necessary consents from Great Yarmouth Borough Council.
Grapevine Extra, coming up straight after Margaret and Andy get you completely up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
A former manager at Norwich's historic Royal Arcade was behind several break-ins of Norfolk holiday chalets. Mason Jones, 28, stole items worth almost £7,000 during an early hours crime spree at the Bermuda Holiday Park in Hemsby. He was caught after his DNA was identified in blood left at the scene when he smashed his way into seven chalets on June the 5th last year. Norwich Crown Court was told Jones had once been the assistant manager of the 150-year-old covered shopping arcade before his life took a chaotic wrong turn into drink and drug-fueled offending. Prosecutors said on the night of the break-in, he had caused extensive damage and stolen items ranging from televisions to games consoles and sets of golf clubs to an air fryer. Noyes had seen residents alert staff at the holiday park, who called 999 after seeing a man flee from one of the chalets. He was on bail for separate offences at the time. Jones of Bates Green in Norwich had previously pleaded guilty at Norwich Magistrates Court to seven counts of dwelling burglaries. Judge Andrew Shaw said the burglaries had been committed on impulse, and although the chalets had been unoccupied at the time, it had nevertheless caused upset and financial loss to the owners. He sentenced him to 14 months, but suspended the jail term for 2 years, saying he believed there was a more than realistic prospect of rehabilitation. Oliver Haswell, mitigating, said the offences had occurred in a chaotic period, but Jones had recently taken on more responsibility for his daughter and was now seeking employment. He was previously involved in a New Year's Eve police chase while 18 times over the limit for ecstasy. He received a 26-week suspended sentence for that, but the court was told he had since fully complied with alcohol treatment and rehabilitation. Judge Shaw said, "You have risen to the challenge and grasped the opportunity afforded to you."
The Great Yarmouth Lions have been hard at work over the past few months, continuing their mission to support the local community. They have donated £1,000 to Great Yarmouth Sea Cadets to ensure they continue running safely, and £500 to Norfolk Lowland Search and Rescue for essential medical equipment. Their philanthropic efforts extend beyond monetary donations. They have provided furniture and children's activity packs to the James Paget University Hospital and sponsored Shrublands under-11s football kits with a keen focus on youth and family well-being. Additionally, a Sarah Steady mobility aid was given to Centre 81 to promote local residents' independence. Through the marathon efforts of local man Simeon Lee, kitchen areas for Sunbeam's new premises have been funded to support attendees' independent living. The group will also host a free senior citizens' afternoon tea on November the 8th. This event will offer an afternoon of tea, treats and friendly company. For more information about the work of the local Lions or to reserve a spot at the afternoon tea, you can call 07411 441096. I'll just say that again. 07411 441096.
The Children's Library in the town's new £17 million facility is closed for more than a week due to flushed wet wipes. The children's section in the place in Great Yarmouth has been closed since October the 18th, with the first announcement saying it was due to unforeseen circumstances. Now, Norfolk County Council, which manages the site, has revealed that the root cause of the closure is a blockage in the nearby toilets. A spokesman for the council said, "This has been caused by the repeated flushing of wet wipes. Despite clear signage advising against this, we are actively working to resolve the problem and reopen the space as soon as possible. In the meantime, the team has moved a selection of children's books and furniture into the main library space. This is not the first time that management has experienced issues with customers misusing the toilets at the place. In July, a sign was put up in the library window reading, "Due to public misuse, we have no toilets available." The place opened its doors to the public inside the former Palmer's building in the heart of the marketplace in May.
People are invited to join Great Yarmouth's annual Trafalgar Day service and to honour the memory of Admiral Horatio Lord Nelson this weekend. The service, which will be led by Reverend Canon Simon Ward, the Rector of Great Yarmouth, takes place at 1 p.m. on Sunday at the Norfolk Naval Pillar, colloquially Nelson's Monument, in Monument Road in the town. People are asked to arrive at 12:50 p.m. and the event will start with a procession from South Beach Parade to the monument, where tots of rum or orange juice will be available to toast Lord Nelson. Norfolk Militia will be present and will take a salute and fire a ceremonial gunshot during the service to honour the naval hero's memory. The Mayor of the Borough of Great Yarmouth, Carl Anderson, will lay a wreath at the monument on behalf of the borough, and Councillor Kerry Robinson Payne, the custodian of the Norfolk Naval Pillar, will read the account of the Battle of Trafalgar. The service will also include hymns and prayers. The Norfolk Naval Pillar marks Nelson's four main naval victories at the Nile, Copenhagen, St Vincent and Trafalgar. It is topped with the figure of Britannia and the motto from Nelson's coat of arms. Councillor Anderson said, "Trafalgar Day holds a special place in our hearts. It pays tribute to the remarkable victory achieved by Admiral Lord Nelson and his brave crew at the Battle of Trafalgar. It is a day when the people of the borough come together to honour courage, unity and resilience. Nelson was born at Burnham Thorpe in Norfolk and visited Great Yarmouth many times during his career and was given the freedom of the borough. The fleet for the Battle of Copenhagen was prepared at Great Yarmouth and landed back in the port after the victory." Councillor Robinson Payne said, "Great Yarmouth's naval pillar is a tribute to the memory of one of Norfolk's greatest heroes, and the service is an opportunity for us to remember those who gave their lives to defend the freedoms we treasure today. The pillar is 144 feet tall and its £7,000 cost was paid for by public donations to commemorate Nelson. It was completed in 1819, 21 years before London's Trafalgar Square monument."
A man who had three children in the car when it crashed into oncoming traffic has denied charges, including attempted murder. Tancredo Bankart was arrested following the three-car collision on the A146 between Hales and Loddon. He is alleged to have deliberately driven his Vauxhall Astra into oncoming traffic on September the 26th after sending a series of troubling text messages. A selfie picture posted on Facebook less than 2 hours before the crash appears to show him inside the car with three youngsters. Bankhart of Saxon Row, Great Yarmouth, appeared before Norwich Crown Court by video link from HMP Norwich and pleaded not guilty to the 11 charges, including the attempted murders of the three children. He is also charged with causing grievous bodily harm, GBH, with intent and causing serious injury by dangerous driving in respect of two of the children and attempting to inflict GBH with intent in respect of the third. Appearing wearing a grey prison sweatshirt and with his leg in a brace from his own injuries, he also denied causing serious injury by dangerous driving after the driver of another car was treated for injuries. Bankhart, who is originally from Brazil but has lived in the UK for a number of years, is also charged with dangerous driving and engaging in controlling or coercive behaviour in respect of a woman. Judge Alice Robinson remanded him to remain in custody until April the 7th next year, when he is due to stand trial, with a time estimate of 8 to 10 days. Following the crash, one of the three children was airlifted to Addenbrooke's Hospital with life-threatening injuries, while another sustained significant facial injuries and the third suffered fractures. A previous court hearing had been told none were wearing seatbelts at the time of the crash. Police had received a 999 call an hour before the crash, raising concerns for the safety of the car occupants.
A homeowner has launched an appeal after planners rejected his bid to extend his property by saying that the proposed design would harm the area's character. Jack Mills has asked the Planning Inspectorate to review Great Yarmouth Borough Council's decision to refuse permission for a single-storey front and side extension to his home on Craddock Avenue. The Council's Planning Department rejected the application because the extension would be harmful to the character and appearance of the dwelling and the street scene, and would be unsympathetic to the form of the original dwelling. If approved, the plans would allow Mr. Mills to create a new study or office on the first floor level and an enlarged kitchen and dining area on the ground floor, providing more flexible space for his family. In his appeal submission, Mr. Mills said the proposal represents a reasonable and well-designed addition that responds to local character while providing essential additional space for the appellant's family. He added that the extension would not cause harm to neighbouring amenity or the street scene, and respectfully requests that the appeal should be allowed and planning permission granted. The appeal will now be considered by the Planning Inspectorate, which will decide whether the Council's refusal should be upheld or overturned.
And now a story about the Port of East Anglia. Norfolk's largest port has been renamed as part of a £10 million investment. The Port of Great Yarmouth will now be known as the Port of East Anglia, operator Peel Ports has announced. The fresh multi-million pound investment will be used to develop the port's northern terminal to support major offshore wind farm projects across the region. It brings the year's total investment in the port up to £10 million, with Peel Ports earmarking £60 million to expand the southern terminal at the Outer Harbour earlier this year. The plans for the southern terminal include a new deep water terminal and will see the addition of 350 metres of quay, a roll-on-roll-off ramp, a heavy lift pad, and approximately 10 hectares of outdoor storage space. The new name is said to reflect Peel Port's growth ambitions for the port, signalling its next phase of development to support the UK's energy transition. The operator said the name change also aligns with the creation of a new combined authority for Norfolk and Suffolk, which was announced earlier this month and will come into effect early next year. David Huck, Chief Operating Officer at Peel Ports Group, said, "It's fantastic to finally launch the Port of East Anglia and commit additional investment to enhance its operations. We see this change as a reflection of our confidence in the wider region, as well as our long-term commitment to support the area's growth. Great Yarmouth has and continues to play a crucial role in the UK's energy transition, and we've committed so much investment into the site to ensure we can deliver what is needed. We want to improve capabilities to ensure the town remains at the forefront of the energy sector for generations to come.
Major roadworks costing nearly £250,000 have begun in Galston, with bus routes being changed. The major resurfacing project began on Church Lane in Galston last week and has caused widespread disruption as bus routes are being diverted. The project affects Church Lane, Church Road and Middleton Road roundabout and the northern end of Middleton Road, with closures in two phases running from October the 25th to November the 20th. The £735,000 scheme, led by Norfolk County Council and supported by Great Yarmouth Borough Council, aims to improve walking, cycling and wheeling routes between Middleton Road and East Norfolk Sixth Form College, including wider footpaths and safer crossings. Bus services to 3/3B, 8X1, X11 and 7 are operating on diverted routes via Beckles Road, Shrublands Way, Lowestoft Road and Albemarle Road. Temporary stops are available near Shrublands Way and a free shuttle bus runs daily between Maglan Estate, Shrublands Way and Galston High Street from 7am to 11pm. Operators apologise for the disruption, with the scheme expected to finish by November the 20th.
A celebration of queer culture with a Rocky Horror screening will be held in Great Yarmouth. Great Yarmouth and Waveney Pride has launched an adults-only event showing the cult classic The Rocky Horror Picture Show, featuring live drag queen performances and a raffle. The free-to-enter event will take place at the Ice House on Saturday, November the 22nd, from 6:30pm to 10pm. A spokesperson for Great Yarmouth and Waveney Pride said, "This is more than just a film screening. It's a celebration of queer culture, self-expression and pure, unadulterated fun. We can't wait to see everyone dressed up and ready to let loose. Will you join us for a night of pure anticipation?" The night will include a screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, live drag queen performances from local talent, and a raffle with prizes donated by local businesses. The event is strictly 18 plus and offers free entry to all, with donations welcomed but not required to support the local LGBTQIA+ community. A fully licensed bar will be available throughout the evening.
More than 75,000 fish have been rescued from Norfolk Broads after recent storms sent a salt surge through the waterways. Storms Amy and Benjamin pushed high levels of salt water into the rivers Ant, Bure and Thurn in October. A sudden rise in saline levels can be fatal to wildlife because it can cause osmotic stress and dehydration, and this has led to hundreds of dead fish being spotted along the Broads. An Environment Agency spokesman has now confirmed staff have recovered 75,000 fish to safe waters. Fisheries officers have rescued more than 75,000 fish on the Norfolk Broads after water quality on three rivers was reduced by naturally occurring changing conditions, he said. "We have raised the fish barrier at Potterhyam Boatyard to help reduce the impact of saline-rich water and create a refuge for the remaining numbers. Our staff remain in the area to monitor conditions and rescue more fish as needed. Anyone spotting fish in distress is urged to call the Environment Agency's 24-hour incident hotline on 0800 807062. And every day's a school day here at Grapevine because I've never heard before the words osmotic stress. Well, you live and learn.
Well, there you go. I don't think I can follow that. However, I follow with the shipping forecast, or more particularly, a show celebrating the quirks and unique appeal of the radio shipping forecast is heading to Great Yarmouth next month. Charlie Connolly's hit production, Attention All Shipping, a celebration of the shipping forecast, will be staged at St George's Theatre on Monday the 11th at 7:30 p.m. The show pays tribute to what Mr Connolly describes as the greatest invention of the modern age. He said, "I'm really excited about bringing Attention All Shipping to Great Yarmouth. Obviously, the town has an extraordinary maritime heritage, meaning the shipping forecast has been a vital resource as well as something to enjoy for its poetry and sense of romance." The forecast celebrated its centenary in 2024 and is marking 100 years as a BBC broadcast this year. Connolly said, "The shipping forecast is an unadulterated force for good. It represents the very best of us. That's why I'm delighted and honoured to celebrate it with so many fellow devotees up and down the land with Attention All Shipping." The show, inspired by Mr Connolly's best-selling book of the same name, has been selling out theatres across the country. He said, "The show is going far better than I could ever have imagined. One of the best aspects of touring Attention All Shipping is seeing firsthand just how popular the shipping forecast is among a wide range of people all over the country. I've met all sorts of folk with a shared love of the shipping forecast, from pop stars to rear admirals, crusty old sea dogs to landlocked insomniacs with not a sea leg between them." Tickets are available at stgeorgestheatre.com or by calling the box office on 01493 331 484.
A Great Yarmouth care home has been awarded a perfect 10 rating on a leading review site. Staff at Eversley Lodge Nursing Home on North Dean's Road say they are proud of achieving the top score on carehome.co.uk. Daniel Bullant, home manager, said, "We are blessed to have a wonderful new luxury care home, but it is my fabulous staff team that makes Eversley the place that residents and their families adore. Everyone here is passionate about providing the very best person-centred care to our residents and support to their families. We're thrilled to be the only care home in the Great Yarmouth area with a 10 rating on carehome.co.uk. It means so much because it comes from the reviews submitted by our residents and their families and friends. The home opened recently on the site of the former Eversley Nursing Home. It's designed with resident well-being in mind, combining the luxury of a boutique hotel with the relaxed atmosphere of a family home. Facilities include a community cafe, a hairdressing salon, and landscaped gardens."
Well, that's it for the news this week. So, welcome to Grapevine Extra. This week we have the Vision Norfolk programme for November, plus a suitably spooky tale from Margaret, and from Andy, The Prince and the Wise Woman, which I have to say was recorded before the appearance of the latest Royal Headlines. Right, it's time for the monthly rundown of the activities available from Vision Norfolk for November. Starting with coffee mornings. These start on Tuesday the 4th with Caster's event held at the Rabbit Hutch from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, with the second one on the 18th. Great Yarmouth has similar events on Wednesday the 5th, the 12th, the 19th and 28th, all from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. All at the Yarmouth Hub, except the one on the 12th, where the venue is to be confirmed as the hub is closed. The Martham Coffee Morning is on the 6th from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Yoga for November is on Wednesday the 5th and 19th from 12:30 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. and the Cribbage Group will be meeting on Thursdays the 6th, the 13th, the 20th and the 27th from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Thursday the 6th and 20th sees the Pub Club from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the Blackfriars Tavern. Now make special note that the Yarmouth Hub will be closed from the 7th to the 11th inclusive, which means that there will be no Weaving or Fishy Friday on the 7th. There is a tour and talk at the Town Hall on Monday the 10th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Meet outside the Town Hall. Tuesday the 11th is bowling from 12 noon until 3 p.m. and there meet at the Wellington Bowl. Thursday the 13th sees Knit, Stitch and Natter from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. and Friday the 14th features basket weaving from 10 a.m. until 12 noon and creative writing from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Weaving is from 10 a.m. until 12 noon on Friday the 21st. Forward then to Monday the 24th, where there's a wreath-making workshop at Cherry Lane Garden Centre. Now there's limited spaces for this, although transport is provided from the hub. Please speak to a staff member if you're interested. A whiskey distillery trip is happening on Thursday the 25th. Again, transport is provided, although there are again limited spaces. And again, more details from a member of staff. Well, the last events of the month are on Friday the 28th, and with the rug workshop from 10 a.m. till 12 noon, and the audio book club from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m., and more details on the latter from Mark or Helen on 01603 573000 extension 341. OK, over to Margaret, followed very closely by Andy.
For the following, we are indebted to Hayden Brown, whose Norfolk Tales series on Facebook provides this article. Ranworth and Ranworth Broad are said to be haunted by a friendly ghost named Brother Pacificus, and it is the early bird that may be in the best position to catch a glimpse of this monk, although he may also be sighted on those quiet summer evenings when everything seems still. Wearing his habit, he may be seen rowing a small boat across the broad with a small dog standing in the prow. The story goes that during the 1530s, the brothers at nearby St. Bennet's Abbey undertook the work of restoring the rude screen of St. Helen's Church in Ranworth. Brother Pacificus was entrusted with the task so early each morning that he would row his boat across the broad from the abbey to the church in order to carry out the restoration work on the screen. He was always accompanied by his little dog, and at the end of the day he would return by the same route. One evening, upon his return to the abbey, Brother Pacificus found to his horror that his brother monks had been murdered by the king's troop, despite the fact that St. Bennet's was never to be dissolved by Henry VIII, and therefore there was no reason for such brutal treatment. Devastated, Pacificus was to linger for years amongst what became ruins and where he eventually died. The local villagers, who knew of his devotion to Ranworth, took his body across the Bure and lovingly laid it to rest in the shadow of St. Helen's, a church that he clearly loved and for which he had worked so hard. To some, he still returns to carry out his work, accompanied by his little dog. They say that he also comes back to pray. Sometimes in the early hours of morning, when it's just light, his little boat may be seen moored to the bank, and sometimes his little dog asleep in it, just waiting. Inside, the aged monk will be kneeling in an attitude of prayer before the centre opening of the rood screen. But with the approach of anyone, he will simply fade into nothingness. On the other hand, and if left alone, he may be seen returning at nightfall to his boat and rowing back to St. Bennet's with his little dog sitting up perkily in the stern. It's best not to laugh at such happenings as that which confronted Pacificus on his journeys to and from Ranworth centuries ago. For it is on record that a certain Reverend James Brewster, D.D. of Balliol, whilst on holiday in 1930 and about to enter a narrow waterway leading to Ranworth Broad, saw a boat being rowed towards him. Pulling into the side to make room, the visitor waited for it to pass by. As he did so, he noticed the rower was a monk in a black habit and, though clearly aged, had the kindest face he had not previously seen on any man. The Benedictine smiled his thanks as he passed and before dissolving into nothing just a short distance on. Dr. Brewster thought there had been a small white dog in the boat, but he couldn't be sure. Apparently he was so moved by this experience that he felt he had to make inquiries hereabouts. At Horning, he was simply laughed at, whilst in Ranworth, he was to learn that what he saw was our monastic friend, Brother Pacificus, going home after his labours, and there is no real or known reason why it should not have been.
This story is entitled The Prince and the Wise Woman. And we're indebted to this story to Hayden Brown, whose Norfolk Tales series on Facebook provides this article. Witches of old may have been persecuted and condemned by the church before being passed over to civil authorities for execution. But, in more enlightened times, they occasionally found themselves in a position of some favour by those in need. In the 19th century, one such wise woman received a discreet royal command, no less. The person happened to be an old woman living in the Norfolk village of Flitcham, and was considered by some to be a witch, while others thought her a wise woman. As the writer Walter H. Barrett put it, not only was she supposed to have the power of putting a curse on people, she was also reputed to have a vast knowledge of herbal cures when other remedies failed. She would wander miles in search of a certain herb she required. Lots of folk sought her aid when they needed a starter or stopper in times of distress. All this has the ingredients of a very curious story, what with a wise woman, or witch on one hand, and a prince on the other. That prince was none other than Albert Edward, the Prince of Wales, who was later to become King Edward VII. He was the eldest son of Queen Victoria and her husband, Prince Albert, who fondly called their son Bertie, as did the rest of the family. It was said that Bertie was a privileged, lazy individual. He was easily bored and uninterested in serious matters. Instead, he took pleasure in the social and pleasurable aspects of life. His infidelities, without putting too fine a point on them, began in the first years of his marriage. The fact that he loved women and found beautiful, intelligent women irresistible. It is said that amongst all his titles that he held, one was called the Protector of the Craft, a title assumed to refer to Freemasonry, in which he was a leading light in forming that organisation into what it is today. However, if the scribes of the time had made a better job of recording the significance of such a title, in other words, if they'd recorded the facts, then the appellation of Protector of the Craft may not have applied to Freemasonry at all. Would it be possible for it to be hints at the crafts of wise women, of which the nearby village of Flitcham certainly had one? No sooner had Queen Victoria bought Sandringham for the prince in 1863 for a reputed £22,000, he expelled several wise women who lived in a group of cottages there. He had the cottages torn down and replaced by modern houses for his servants. Only one wise woman was allowed to remain near the estate. It was further said that the prince's agent dare not remove her. That woman's name was never recorded. However, it was known that she was a herbal medic, an abortionist, and a practitioner of the use of rue tea. All this indicates that the cures and craft of the old wives or wise women of the era were respected and indeed used by the highest in the land, where nothing else would work. This ambivalent attitude in law of the upper classes to many things is probably something one might expect from any privileged class. However, that apart, our story says that in 1880, Bertie was taken ill, and he lost much of his usual energy. Certainly for his two beloved hobbies. One was his stud of thoroughbred horses on the Sandringham estate. The other was the thoroughbred ladies he entertained inside his grand house. They were, as Walter H. Barrett further put it, as a result of having to keep one eye on the brood mares in the stables and the other eye on the females inside the house, and surprisingly, perhaps, his health broke down. He was very ill for a considerable period. Bertie's wife, Princess Alexandra, consulted with her sister-in-law, the Grand Duchess Olga of Russia. The topic discussed was said to be about what could be done to get Bertie back on his feet and active again. Both women could see that the preferred medicines and efforts prescribed thus far had not been up to the job. Both women agreed that another opinion should be obtained. Also, the only other possible solution to the prince's problem was maybe a combination of the Danish faith in the supernatural and the long-standing Russian belief in sorcery and black magic. As things were to turn out, neither needed to be imported, for the answer lay on their doorstep. It could well be imagined that the utmost discretion had to be applied to their inquiries, both within their immediate circle of contacts, but particularly in their mind, down through the social class system. It was, in fact, down below where the answer lay, as some of Princess Alexandra's kitchen staff politely reminded her. If indeed the princess needed to be reminded of a certain elderly woman, a supposed witch, no less, who still lived in Flitcham, she might be able to be of assistance. Summoned to her royal presence, this old woman produced a bottle of wine she had made and instructed Her Royal Highness to give the prince 3 glasses of the wine each day, advising her that HRH would be fully recovered in 3 days if he managed to avoid the undertaker. Such was the elixir's potency if misused. In due course, as the old woman had predicted, the prince recovered, and the grateful princess apparently sent a purse of gold coins to the woman, along with a request for more wine. In a postscript to this story, Walter Barrett later recalled that around the mid-1920s, he visited the Bell Public House in Flitcham for nothing more than refreshments. Although, remembering the incident of the Princess Wales period of illness some 40 years previously at Sandringham House, asked the publican, Edward Cox, about the old woman, who had apparently supplied the prince with some special wine. The publican said he knew nothing of her, adding that she had died years before he'd come to the village. However, if this Mr. Barrett would care to buy a pint or two for the elderly local man who was clearly having a quiet moment in front of the fire, he would obtain all that he wanted to know. The placing of a freshly pulled pint of beer in the hand of this elderly local immediately had the desired response from him. He did indeed remember the old gal when he was just a young man, a time when his mother and she had been long-standing friends. Not only could he recall how she was regularly used by the locals, in preference the local quack, to supply curative medication, but he remembered what her brew of roux tea was like. It was something he described as being like liquid gunpowder. He went on to say she had lots of cures in her cottage, and that she stocked her own special homemade wine, which he claimed she never drank herself. It seems she preferred to stick to the gin that she collected from the back door of the Bell, always knocking back one before taking the rest home. Many came to the conclusion that this special wine of hers was made from the mandrake root, and was particularly sought after by the local gentry to supply a much-wanted energy. No names, no pack drill, as they say. Who better placed than the wise woman of Flitcham? And as Walter Barrett himself suggested, this old woman was probably well aware of the biblical story. Genesis 30:14, if you're interested. Wherein Reuben collects mandrake root to assist his mother Leah in regaining Jacob's affections, to the consternation of her jealous sister Rachel, who was well aware of the herb's powers. Thus said, the flow of information which had freely flown from the elderly local's lips following each gulp of beer in the Bell that day abruptly stopped when his pint pot ran dry. He declined another, having really had sufficient beforehand, and the reason why he was dozing in the first place. However, as a gesture of gratitude to the inquirer, he offered the comments of claiming that he remembered hearing that the old woman had shown his mother a handful of gold coins, which she said had been given to her by Princess Alexandra for services rendered. We know nothing more. However, A footnote to this story shows that an examination of the 1881 census shows that the oldest female residents of Flitcham were the widows. Lydia Bridges, who was 105, Mary Chilvers at 92, Jane Bridges, 83 years old and resident at the Bell Inn, being the mother of the then landlady, and the vicar's mother, Irish-born Honora O'Malley, who was 83. It would seem that the last two women didn't fit the wise woman of this story, suggesting that either Lydia or Mary might possibly be her. But we don't know. We probably never will. And just as a warning, and possibly a bit of an explanation, mandrake root was said to resemble the human form and was used in medieval times as a painkiller and anaesthetic, as well as an aphrodisiac. However, as a member of the belladonna and potato family, it's apparently highly toxic in all its forms and should not be used today except for ornamental purposes.
Well, that's about the height of it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week's newsreaders will be Andrew and Alison. So, we hope that we can look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. From everyone at Grapevine, it's bye for now.